Welcome into a solo edition of the Locked On Nets podcast this Friday morning. We are talking a brutal 101-91 defeat to the Utah Jazz. The fourth quarter was bad, but frankly, the whole game kind of sucked, even though the Nets were up by 10 at the end of the third. We're going to get into that, but first, a bittersweet announcement that next on the Locked On Nets podcast.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Friday morning. Happy almost weekend. A lot of reasons to be excited. The Nets, not really one of them. That was just an awful game against the Utah Jazz. But before we get into that, as stated in the intro, a little bit of an announcement, and it breaks my heart to do it, but I'll get it out as quickly as possible. This is going to be my final week or so on the Locked On Nets podcast, and it's for a good reason, or at least in my mind, a good reason. You guys might hate it, but about 10, 12 days, it was about, yeah, maybe 2 weeks ago at this point, I found out James Marceda, who you've heard on this podcast a couple of times, was actually leaving the Locked On Podcast Network, and that's a shame in and of itself, because James, I mean, you guys heard him on this one, I'm sure. Some of you have occasionally, I know there's some closeted Knicks fans on here, you've probably snuck over, and you know, you feel a little bit dirty doing it, but you've done it, and you've probably checked out an episode of Locked On Knicks or two, so anyone who's done that knows what an incredible job James does or did on the Locked On Knicks podcast, and he was really special at it. But hey, the guy got his dream job. He is headed to San Francisco. He is going to be a writer for NBA 2K. And anyone who was just even listening to one of his intros and knows how extremely creative that guy is knows he's going to be absolutely great in that role. So first and foremost, a big shout out to James. I think he's going to do great. And then at that point, I reached out to David about potentially transitioning over to Locked On Knicks, and we've been talking over the last 2 weeks, and that is something that's going to happen. I'm going to host it along with Alex Wolf of Posting and Toasting, a guy who I'm really excited to work with. And the thing was that I was kind of torn about doing this because I genuinely love this podcast. I love working with Josh. There's nothing. I don't know how many of you are lucky enough to have gotten to do it at some point, or maybe you start a job and you become really good friends with someone. But the opportunity to work day in and day out with one of your best friends, and that work, quote unquote, is talking about basketball, and is talking about, frankly, like a team that I've really grown to admire and a team that I've grown to love watching with a broadcast crew I've grown to love. That's not really work. That's kind of play. And again, not that we get paid a lot of money for it, but it's something that I would do for free. And frankly, for the first couple of months to the first year, was essentially doing this for free. But I don't know. I mean, I guess there's nothing like it. There was nothing like the opportunity to get to do this with Josh on a day-to-day basis, because the same conversations we have on this podcast are the same conversations we have just hanging out. And the fact that people would take time out of their day to listen to that, and the fact that we really just a lot of times bombard you guys with podcasts, and it can be at least recently 3 to 5 podcasts a week, and people are just consistently taking 20 to 25 minutes out of their day. And I don't pretend you guys probably aren't doing something else while you're listening to this, but you would even devote some aspect of your attention to listening to Josh and I talk about basketball. I mean, all I can say from the bottom of my heart is thank you. And it was something I dreamed about growing up, is being a radio host. I didn't even, probably when I first started thinking about it, I couldn't even contemplate what a podcast was. I don't think they really existed at that point. But just to be a part of people's lives day in and day out and have an opportunity to kind of share my love of basketball with them, and I hope that's something that's come through doing the podcast. And this move, as much as it is about the fact that I'm a lifelong Knicks fan, and in that sense, it is a genuine dream. It was, I mean, to some extent, just a financial reality that that was something that eventually I was going to try and get, and something I wanted to get, and I'm happy to do it, and I'm excited, looking forward and seeing what covering the Knicks is going to bring. But simultaneously, I am going to miss watching the Nets play, because I know it doesn't always come through on this podcast, and some people complain that Josh and I were maybe too pessimistic at points. I am really excited to see what this team does going forward. And I mean, just the fact that they might actually have a good pick this year, which isn't something we could say about them for the last near decade at this point. Yes, I think there are a lot of reasons for optimism. As far as the logistical side of all this, I'm going to probably give you guys, I'm going to try and give you guys 2, 3, 4 more episodes in the next week. Maybe it'll be on the lower side of that, but I don't know. We're kind of figuring it out, just how many we can get done in the next week. Obviously, Josh, he has an early flight tomorrow. Couldn't be on this one. And then as far as the next host goes, I think Josh is, yeah, I mean, and he can talk about this better when he's next on the podcast, but I know he's thinking about staying on and hosting it solo. I obviously hope that it's the direction he goes, and that way you guys get some continuity. Maybe we bring on another co-host. I'm sure I'll be stopping by quite a bit every time the Knicks play the Nets, maybe once a month, just to check in, see how things are going. But we are none of that is finalized yet. We are still figuring it out. I just wanted to be as transparent with you guys about how this is going down, why I'm leaving, and what the future of this podcast is going to be, because you've been so loyal to us. I can't help but want to reciprocate that. All right, that's it for the announcement. Again, I can't thank everyone enough. The last month of this podcast has been the best we've ever had, and I mean that really does mean everything to me. So thank you again, and we'll get into our show next on Locked On Nets. Guys, if you're like me and possess the unfortunate combination of having terrible circulation, having moved to Arizona for 4 years, and then having moved back to New York, by which point your resistance to the cold was relatively non-existent, may I recommend Action Heat? Action Heat makes the world's best battery-heated clothing. Heat on demand at the touch of a button. Control your environment with Action Heat. Action Heat clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat via heating panels similar to a heated car seat. Those are great, by the way, if you haven't tried this out. Really, really love them. They can reach temperatures of up to 135 degrees and are powered by a rechargeable 5-volt lithium-ion battery that lasts up to 12 hours on each charge. Action Heat batteries can also be used to recharge your phone or any other gadget while you're wearing them. Pretty useful. Perfect for any family member or friend on your holiday gift list. Great for anybody who works outdoors, skiers, snowboarders. Action Heat clothing provides toasty warmth and comfort for your whole body, including heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, and even undergarments like heated base layer shirts. Ooh, sounds excellent. And long johns. You can stay warm and cozy from head to toe with Action Heat. Action Heat is available for both men and women, and they have great new styles and models just released for this 2018-19 winter season. Make winter activities more enjoyable with a blast of warmth. Action Heat is the perfect solution to keep you toasty and warm even in the most frigid winter weather, which we are about to get a lot of in New York, so be sure to check out Action Heat. We are back on the Locked On Nets podcast. It was a 101-91 defeat at the hands of the Utah Jazz, and I'm not going to lie to you guys, this was an ugly game. It dropped the Nets to 2-6 since Caris LeVert got injured. Each of these last two games, very winnable. That record could somehow, by some miracle, given everything LeVert meant to this team, just as easily have been 4-4. But the Nets failed to close this one, and frankly, they failed to take advantage of a lot of opportunities to separate in the first half. And give the Nets some credit, they were pretty good defensively up until the fourth quarter of this game, but a lot of it was just that, like, the Jazz are in such a bad spot right now. I watched them in Philly 2 weeks ago, and it was just a lot of the same stuff, and for whatever reason, they don't necessarily have that cohesion in their defense. And their toughness keeps them in games. But Ricky Rubio looks just like washed as an offensive player. He couldn't do anything in this game. He kind of reminds me of D'Lo, but with somehow an even worse shooting touch, just not really able to get anything going offensively. And then Joe Ingles, who is one of my favorite players in the NBA when he's on, was also absolutely atrocious. Despite that, the Nets just not able to get anything going offensively to take advantage of both each of those trends. The 16-point first quarter, that was the worst scoring quarter, not just first quarter, the worst scoring quarter the Nets have had the entire season. This game was 26-25 with 6 minutes left in the first half. That is a typical score for the Nets with 6 minutes left in the first quarter. So just about everything that could go wrong in this game did. Despite all of it, the Nets up by 11 at the end of the or near the end of the third quarter. And then Royce O'Neal, of all people, just rips the Nets' heart out, hits this tough three, hits the shot clock beating runner at the foul line. And from that point forward, it was the Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert show. And the Nets just, frankly, without Caris LeVert, just did not quite have the star power to match those two. And that led to a disappointing fourth quarter and a Nets loss. And to me, at least, I mean, the Nets, what I guess, the just off the dribble juice they're lacking since LeVert got hurt was no more obvious at any point than in the first quarter of this one, where they just couldn't get anything going on the attack. And the Jazz are good defensively. Gobert against the right teams. Hint, hint, the Nets. He is still absolutely a defensive force. But the Nets had their opportunities in this game, and it was a combination of D'Angelo Russell just being utterly atrocious, 6 of 25 from the field. Alan Crabb, very inconsistent as per usual, 3 of 10, missed a wide-open layup at one point, had this stretch where he hit two threes in a row, and you thought he was about to get things going, and then I think went on to miss three threes that didn't really come anywhere close to hitting the rim. They started Rondae Hollis-Jefferson again in this game. I kind of like the decision. He had a really good night, 14 points, 11 rebounds, 6 of 13 from the field. But again, his inefficiency from the field, his inability to consistently get to the line, and the fact that his defense isn't quite as high level as it was last season all contribute to the fact that even on nights where he plays well, he's still not an extraordinarily valuable player. Jared Allen, 14 points, 11 rebounds, or excuse me, 14 points, 10 rebounds. Still kind of disappointing. I don't know. I kind of agree with what Josh has been saying about him. He puts up the numbers. He punches up the box score, however you want to phrase it, but it just doesn't really seem like he's bringing it night to night. And Gobert just like sunned him a couple of different times. The big dunk at the end of the game, that was kind of, I think it was in the final 2 minutes, and it seemed like just about like a fatal blow to the Brooklyn Nets. It wasn't necessarily his fault. Gobert kind of armbarred him when Allen went to block his shot, but still kind of got stunned by Gobert there. Gobert scored the first 6 points for the Jazz. If not the Nets, it kind of felt like they could have run away with this one early. Ed Davis, I thought this was one of his worst games of the season, where he just had 2 points, 10 rebounds. Like, it feels like the first game all year where he shot under 50% from the field. And not that they were necessarily easy looks, but he couldn't convert around the basket a couple of different times throughout this game. And yeah, I'm trying to think of some unifying theory to sum up the Nets' struggles in this one. It was just an ugly, ugly game. I would just kind of go big picture instead of focusing on the details of this one, because there just wasn't really too much to write home about on either end. It was just the case of the Jazz, again, with D'Lo playing like he was. Dinwiddie somehow only playing 21 minutes despite scoring 18 points in those 21 minutes, which is pretty inexplicable. They're just not having the star power to really match Donovan Mitchell and the Utah Jazz, which, again, even without LeVert, I think given how the Jazz are playing, is pretty inexplicable. But going big picture here, I would just reemphasize the fact that I think the Nets need to get Rodion Skrouts back into the rotation. And I trust to a degree that Kenny Atkinson is playing the guys that he feels give him the best chance to win. Because if he genuinely thought Skrouts was a better player at this point, then someone like, I don't know, Damari Carroll or Alan Crabb, he would probably be playing it, because there's no disincentive to play the young, superior players outside of maybe some locker room implications that are kind of difficult for us to be aware of, not being around the team on a day-to-day basis, but I digress. I would just largely say, I think you need that burst of energy. I think they need some youth. I think they need someone willing to attack the basket with no Caris LeVert. And in my mind, Damari Carroll is just absolutely washed at this point. 2 points. Had 3 rebounds in right around 19 minutes, did not have an assist on the night, and that's kind of been the typical effort for him. He's had the occasional game where he shot the ball well since he came back from injury, but by and large, he has been really, really disappointing so far this season and just hasn't been able to discover the same form he had last season, and frankly, I don't think he's ever going to discover that form, so I think, again, the most logical scenario here is this ends with a buyout, maybe some kind of desperate pseudo playoff team like, and I can't believe I'm saying this, the Houston Rockets fit that description. Maybe they end up with Damari Carroll. Maybe he's better in that situation. But on this Nets team, he just has clearly lost a step from last season, and a step was all he had in terms of beating guys off the dribble last year. It was by the thinnest of margins, and with that gone, he's just not doing much. Jared Dudley hasn't really done anything since moving to the bench. He nearly had an 18-minute trillion tonight, which is just astounding. That, of course, is the statistic invented by Mark Titus, where you don't put up a box score statistic in any amount of play. I think an 18 trillion would be pretty darn close to the all-time record. So Dudley in 18 minutes tonight, essentially doing nothing when he was on the floor, positive or negative. Two field goal attempts, both from three, missed both of them. Did have one rebound, did have one turnover, one steal, one foul. So maybe I'm not giving him quite enough credit, but just a really nondescript night for him. Again, yeah, only thing I can kind of take away from watching the game, looking at the box score, is I would have liked it if Dinwiddie and Harris combined for more than 15 shots between the two of them. And I really think Dinwiddie, who was really the only guy who I would say indisputably had a super strong game, I'd kind of put Hollis Jefferson in that category on the night. I think he should have played more than 21 minutes. All right, that's it for the game recap. We'll come back. We'll quickly talk about the Grizzlies game coming up tonight, actually, next on Locked On Nets.
You know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice. Usually it's, which team should I bet on this week? The truth is, I don't know who's going to win. But if you think you do, you gotta check out my bookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with my bookie. Trust me, they are the best bet you'll make this season. They've been in business for years, have great online reviews, and their mobile site is super easy to use. So you can lay down some cash and win today. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. My fantasy teams are excellent this season. I don't have to do that. Yours? Probably not as good, so I'd recommend getting on MyBookie and doing that immediately. Plus, if you join now, MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar up to $1,000. All you have to do is use my promo code LOCKEDON25 to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use my promo code with a capital L, LOCKEDON25, when creating your account to claim the bonus. You play, you win, you get paid.
Welcome back. We are talking Nets Grizzlies. I don't really know what to expect. The Sixers game was just about the best the Nets could have possibly played in a loss. I think they had a stat on the Jazz broadcast mentioning that it was the first time the Nets had lost shooting better than 56.5% from the field since 1987. So that just gives you a pretty good idea of how unlikely it was and just how poor things had to go in the fourth quarter. Michael Grady went through the two-minute report for the Nets to blow that one. Then they come out just lifeless against the Jazz in a game that was very much for the taking heading into the fourth quarter. And once again, they failed to execute. They failed to pull it off. I think the Grizzlies game will be probably largely the same way. The Grizzlies are just too tough, too sharp to really let the Nets run away with this one. And I expect kind of a better effort from D'Angelo Russell in what has been a seesaw season for him. He goes down, he goes up, he goes down, he goes up. He's due to go up in this game. Spencer Dinwiddie, he's averaging over 20 points in his last seven games now. I expect that to continue. He's been playing great basketball. I just don't know where else you're going to get consistent contributions on this Nets team. The Grizzlies have been the fifth best defense in basketball. Marc Gasol has been playing out of his mind on both ends of the floor. Mike Conley has an opportunity to be the best guard on the floor in this game, and I think he probably should be based on his pedigree. And yeah, just across the board, the Grizzlies, tough, scrappy team, and I think they're frankly just stronger-willed and tougher-minded than this Nets group. So I'd kind of consider them the favorite going in. As far as what the Nets could do to shift that dynamic, I think you're really going to need a high-energy game from Jared Allen, really making Gasol work defensively, putting him in a lot of pick and rolls, and that's where anywhere defensively Gasol struggles a little bit. His mobility isn't quite the same as it was when he was younger, so I think you could take advantage of that by constantly trying to get him out on the perimeter, either get him on switches or have him Chase Allen rolling to the basket again and again and again. And then defensively, they need an effort kind of like what they had against the Jazz, where everyone was really engaged, everyone was playing balls to the wall for the better part of four quarters, and if they can bring that, this Memphis team still has a little bit of the grit and grind of old where they can kind of sog down a little bit and not really be all that cohesive offensively, and just because they kind of survived that because of the brilliance of Gasol and Conley, and their role players have kind of been playing out of their minds over the first 20 or so games of the season, but I don't know if that's necessarily sustainable, and it's something the Nets could theoretically take advantage of. All right, those are your quick thoughts on Nets Grizzlies. Next time around, we will have Josh back with us, and I'm super excited for that. Sorry for dropping a bombshell on you guys at the beginning of this podcast, but again, I just wanted to reemphasize how genuinely thankful I am you continue to listen. I hope you stick with us on this ride. I'm sure for the last podcast, we'll do something fun, maybe go over some memories, some of our favorite moments from our time doing the podcast together. We'll get to that in the next week on Locked On Nets. So thanks again, and have a great weekend, assuming we don't get back to you until maybe Sunday.